You're listening to Weird and Dead, the paleontology podcast that tells evolution's most embarrassing and bizarre stories. I'm Megan Wetherill.
And I'm Amy Atwater, and we are two scientists who are weirdly excited about dead things. This is the episode that literally led to the creation of this podcast because we want to talk about this so bad. Like all the time. Two strangers at dinner parties, and we really needed a more appropriate venue. And this episode is all about the best preserved sturgeon fossil in the entire world and where it was discovered. Up the butt of a dinosaur.
Our podcast talks about some disgusting things, so definitely do not eat while listening. But really, on this episode, we found a lot of incredible ways to describe buttholes and the things inside them, and it's a lot. So check the warnings in the description.
There is a museum in Montana. I may or may not have worked for this museum at one time. That houses a spectacular fossil that the museum really shies away from talking about, which is
I don't know why. It's
an absolute shame. They'll tell you they'll tell you the good parts. They'll be like, it's a really well-preserved fossil, but they won't tell you why. This fossil has the specimen number of MOR-1184. It is a nearly complete sturgeon. So a big, big fish from the late Cretaceous. It's from a site that's about 78 million years old. Sturgeon are one of the oldest fish that we have. Their fossil record goes back like 120, 150 million years ago, which is really interesting on its own. But the fossil record of them is really scanty. It's not very good, mostly because even though sturgeon are fish, they are made up of mostly cartilage. They have like bony scutes, which are essentially like bony scales that are kind of like an armor kind of thing. And they've got like pectoral spines and stuff from their fins, but they're largely cartilage, which is why 1184 is so incredible, is that it is almost entirely preserved, and it's preserved in 3D. Like, you can see the details of the skull, you can see, like, the shape of the body and the tail, which, again, really, really wild for fossil fish, which are normally just absolutely flattened into a slab, and you can't really get an idea for their actual body shape. But with 1184, you can find the details of the skull bones, you can see the fins, you can see the scales, you can see the cute little weird tail, and it is, from my reading, I think it's the most complete sturgeon fossil that we have in the world ever. And its preservation is all thanks to the dinosaur's butthole that it was found inside of. We got there. That's right. This sturgeon was discovered in the back door of a duckbill dinosaur, aka a hadrosaur. Because apparently this dinosaur's poo-poo palace just happened to be the ideal environment for fossilizing this incredible sturgeon. Which, again, not a small fish, guys. Not a small fish. And what's even more wild to me, and we'll talk more about this, is that this is not the only sturgeon from the Cretaceous found in this exact same environment. And by that I mean up the butt of a hadrosaur. It is really, really wild. 1184 is one of three sturgeon in the world that has been found up the rear of a duckbill dinosaur. There's also been their close relative, a Cretaceous paddlefish, preserved the same way. I am not sure if you're aware of what a paddlefish looks like, but they are really weird looking. They're another very ancient fish. They have like essentially, like this long paddle that extends from the front, like their nose-ish area, that kind of looks like if you took like a platypus or a duck and you just stretched it out a foot or so, or even further. So now envision.
So it's kind of like you stepped on the front of a sturgeon.
Yeah, and like, and if the front of the sturgeon was modified into like a slip and slide or like a cross country ski, and now envision that up your butt. Which honestly goes to, I will die on this hill that hadrosaurs were the kinkiest of all the dinosaurs. I don't want to hear about all the horny ceratopsians. I am telling you, hadrosaurs have been found over and over again with weird fish up their rear. And it is really, really, really strange and hilarious. I don't know why the museum doesn't want to talk about it. They're missing out.
Seems like the best story ever told.
I know. I remember when they told me and I was like, wait, what? Why
did we just say there was a cool sturgeon preserve? That's definitely the dumbest part of the story.
They're like, look at this great fish with no other context. And you're like, right, but why is it so great? And it's because of this bubble butt situation, this butt buddies phenomenon. And it leads us to our topic for today, which is how do we get fossils preserved like this? Like, how did this happen? Why did it happen? How many other hadrosaurs are out there waiting to be found with weird Cretaceous cartilaginous fish up their rears? I don't know. But to answer that, we really got to start with some basics. So let's go back, Megan. Let's talk about fossilization and what it even is in the first place.
Yes, yes. So this episode is not just about fish up the butt. This is also about fossilization in general. So my preferred definition of fossilization is any trace of ancient life, because that is open-ended and vague, which is really what you do need when you're talking about fossilization. So probably the most conventional type of fossilization that most people will have heard of is permineralization, also called petrification, where you have minerals seeping into the bones or into a tree trunk and replacing some ions, replacing portions of them, filling other portions, and basically you become a rock. That is definitely not the only type of fossilization. There's also, there's also, I died afterwards and left my footprint in this mud, or my skin imprint in this mud. There's poop fossils. There are vomit fossils, and I do have a very good selfie with a vomitite from Nebraska. So. Oh. Yeah, be jealous for forever.
I'm putting together like why they're the whole, yeah, like that's probably a really sad, sad story.
Yeah. Vomitites are very cool and also really depressing to kind of think about the context in which your vomit will be preserved. It's not like a fun night out. It's
you're dying.
Large scale catastrophe.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Sorry, college students. Your vomit isn't going to preserve in the same way, but I guess that's a good thing. Don't leave your mark that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Also clean up after yourself.
Yes.
So you've got things like trace fossils and you've got imprints, which is a lot of times what you describe leaves. So leaves will leave more like carbonaceous imprints as well. So that's the general way that you can fossilize. We're going to dedicate a whole episode at some point to mummies and things you find in bogs and ice and all sorts of stuff where, yeah, it's a fossil, but like also, is it though? Because it's not really preserved, which is why we like the really general kind of open-ended definition. I've also heard that people will say like 10,000 years is the cutoff.
Right.
That's arbitrary. Some things are considered fossils at that point and some things aren't. So yeah, the difference between an archaeologist and a paleontologist is a very finely defined line that doesn't really mean anything.
It's a line drawn that we drew in the sand that the fossils and the animals do not care about whatsoever.
How does fossilization of any of these various types happen, Amy?
Fossilization is an incredibly rare event that we have to just start out with that. It's very rare for an organism or a trace of an organism to be preserved, and then it's even more rare to find it. That's the part I really like to emphasize when I'm talking to like museum visitors or kids or something like that, is the rocks are out there, but unless they're exposed, so like a lot of the Midwest and eastern portions of the United States, people don't think of them as being as fossiliferous, if you will. And it's not that they aren't, it's that their rocks aren't as exposed because they're covered in this annoying vegetation. But again, that's like after something's actually been fossilized, is how the heck do you actually find it? But how do things actually become fossilized? Well, again, it can be like a track. So an animal doesn't necessarily have to die in this process, but we prefer the times when animals die, of course. I really like trace fossils too.
Oh, okay. I was like, they do have to, do you think fossils aren't dead? Fossils are definitely all signs of dead life.
They're definitely all dead now. Whoever left that track is dead, but they didn't die as they left the track.
The second pair of footprints followed him in the sand. Right?
But I also, I'm just going to admit this because I am a naive vertebrate person. I like things with bones. But I did have a friend who deals with more invertebrate stuff point out to me one time that all the trilobite fossils, which are those weird little cockroachy looking things from the Paleozoic that you can find in like Utah and places like that, that those didn't necessarily die. They could be their molts because that's how...
I want to reiterate, they died. It's just not their bodies. Like, that's, like, I don't want us to think that there are immortal trilobites. Yeah, they just, they left behind parts of their face first.
Right.
Invertebrates do.
But they are all dead now. Yes, they're all dead now.
Yeah.
And so when you have that situation where it's like, okay, let's go back to the hadrosaur. You have this dead hadrosaur. You have to make sure that the hadrosaur doesn't get eaten in its entirety, right? It can't be scavenged to the point where you cannot put any of it together. It also cannot decompose too much because, again, that's how things break down. And so we don't want things that are going to be broken down. So sometimes even like the heat of a decaying body can be really, really bad. So a little bit of scavenging can be good because it can open up the body cavity. Anyway, we'll talk more about this next time. I have some ideas, but you do need this kind of ideal situation where it's not scavenged too much, it hasn't decomposed too much, and it gets covered up, it gets buried. And then hopefully millions of years later, we can actually find it if the rocks are brought back up to the surface again. So that, it just kind of goes over the basics. Of course, there are exceptions to all of these things.
Everything has an exception,
But let's talk about, you know, we already hinted, we'll talk more about our sturgeon friend. But what are some other examples of incredible preservation in the fossil record that we have?
Yeah, so beyond just fish preserved in the butt of a hadrosaur dinosaur, we do have quite a few really beautifully preserved areas that have basically all of the criteria that you just mentioned, right? You want it to be anoxic, which means no oxygen. You want it to probably be rapid burial, but not so fast that everything gets smashed and moved around. So lakes and ocean environments and deltas and things are all really great for that. And you want really, really, really badly for things to not be scavengeable. So you don't want other animals eating the stuff, which is part of where the anoxia really helps, because you can't eat it if you can't breathe while you're next to it.
Good point.
Yeah. Anoxic lake environments are a really, really common place where you find these fossils that are beautifully preserved. These are called Lagerstätte.
It means, to be particular, it means storage place.
Storage, whatever. But it's a beautiful place of beautiful fossils, nice preservation. Some of the classic examples include places like Messel in Germany, which is this amazing Eocene deposit that formed in an old volcanic crater. And like many other Lagerstätts, it's very easy to preserve fossils if you can both kill things and kill the things that would come after them and eat them and cover them. Like, if you can do all three, you're definitely going to have some fossils. So
take note. These are the ingredients. Take note,
geologic formations.
Volcanoes. We see you.
Yeah. We see what you've done for us, okay? And so Messel is one of those where they think that potentially there was basically, you know, it was a volcanic crater, which became a lake, as they do. And then it burped up a whole bunch of carbon dioxide every once in a while and just murdered animals up on the surface. They fell into the lake. They fell all the way down to the bottom. And because it was a very deep lake, it was anoxic at the bottom. So deep lakes have this problem with circulation. You don't get a lot of circulation that goes all the way down to the bottom layers. So the bottom layers very rarely have abundance of oxygen, which means that we have these beautifully preserved animals at Messel. And the term for these carbon dioxide volcanic burps is mazuku, which is a Swahili word that means evil wind. And unlike Amy's farts, mazukus are genuinely pretty deadly. And they do actually kill people still, because they come kind of out of nowhere. And it's CO2, which you wouldn't think is like toxic, But if you're hanging out in a cloud of air that you can't breathe, yeah.
That'll do.
It'll kill you.
That'll do.
Yeah. So Mazookas at Messel, in particular, they preserved a lot of really amazing animals. There's 5 or more pregnant Eocene horses.
How dare you?
Make deliberate eye contact. Horses. They're horses. God, what do you think I was going to say? There are some dead monkeys.
Of course.
But I don't think they were pregnant. Other cool things that have died at Messel. Thank you, Messel, for burping up so much toxic gas. Bats. A whole lot of bats. A bird. And 9 pairs of mid-coitus turtles.
Wait. Why were they?
Oh, they do mate butt to butt. So we are still talking about butt fossils.
That should be the title of this podcast episode, yeah. Is butt fossils. But wait, okay, were there like non-coitus turtles too? Or yes. Were all the turtles yes. doing it? Okay.
So there are, at the paper that I read, which was, I'm sure they found more turtles since then. At that point in like 2012, there were 51 turtles. And 9 pairs of them were found butt to butt, with one being bigger and one being smaller. And so they think that these turtles died mid-coitus, which is actually
doing
why
it,
they
guys.
Think...
Doing it, guys. Doing it.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Porking.
Turtling.
So, turtling. Oh, no. I don't think that's what that means. Anyway, so these turtles are actually part of why we think that it really was these carbon dioxide burps, because the other going theory as something that has happened to other Lagerstätten is that you get algae and this algae creates algal blooms and they basically release toxins into the water. So anything that drinks the water dies. But these turtles would have already been in the water, you know, doing it for a while. So they would have needed some sort of really immediate event. And I haven't been able to figure out if that's why bats and birds are also preserved in here, is that you, because bats and birds, A, you know, they have little skinny bones, they're easy to crush, but B, they fly around, so it's harder to trap them.
Right, why are they in a lake?
Exactly, and so I like to think that Messel just, like, dragon breathed out so that we actually have a record of some bats. Yeah.
Everything just fell from the sky in this sad, sad, sad day that we're all thankful for now.
Yes. So it's not just these kind of big carbon dioxide winds that preserve these things. You do get other areas that have anoxic lake environments. And we're, of course, mammal folks. So Messel is my favorite example. But there's also that big lake in China, the Jehol biota, which is just this really lovely early Cretaceous section of like Microraptor and all of these early weird birds, and my new favorite name of any fossil ever, potentially. Like, this makes me more excited about the Cretaceous than I've ever been. I've spent more time today looking into this site.
That's saying something, guys.
Yeah, that's really saying something.
Megan is not a Cretaceous fan.
That's right. So there were a lot of avialins, which are not quite birds, but they're not quite dinosaurs. They're like, or avialins is like the general term if you want to include birds and
theropods. Okay.
Archaeopteryx and nothing before that. Yeah. Avialins. But so there's a bunch of them, including Jehalornis, which is a genus, and one species, Jehalornis. Palma penis.
Wait, why? Tell me why. I need to know why.
I don't know. Palma I didn't find that out.
Penis?
No. And it is one of the bigger avialins that are found in this formation, of course. Jehalornis palma penis. J palma penis. Yeah.
Uh-huh. This is an opportunity to get cloacas into the discussion yet again, but we don't need to go there. We don't need to. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So we've got some cool, I mean, do we have any sites in like North America or the United States that, you know,
that have Jehalornis palma penis? No.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think it's actually, it's like a turkey sized, not quite a bird feathered thing, that's known from, the Jehol biota. But, yeah, so there's a ton of Lagerstätten. And a lot of them, well, ton. Okay. There's not a ton. Fossils are rare. Yada, 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 yada.
There's more Lagerstättens than there are sturgeon, complete sturgeon fossils.
That is true. And that is a great segue. Because, yeah, you can have these lake environments that preserve these beautiful specimens, but that's not where the sturgeon was found. The sturgeon was not found in a lake environment. It was found inside Ducky. So how does a hadrosaur offer such a great fossilization process? I mean, cartilage is really delicate. So how did Ducky do it?
Right. How did Ducky do it? Well, you know, I think that these are great conversations. I can't wait because I have so many lists of so many more euphemisms for poop hole to get into. So before we dive into that dark, dark black hole, let's take a short little break, shall we?
Yes, let's take a break. We'll be right back with more hadrosaur butthole jokes.
Looking for the perfect new nerdy addition to your wardrobe? How about fancy fossil shoes made by Megan herself? Her store, geopedalfabric.com, has all the best nice but niche footwear like trilobite high tops, how freaking cool, and mosasaur decorated lace-ups. Enter code WEIRDANDDEAD at checkout for 10% off your order.
Enjoying this episode? Help us make more of them by supporting us on Patreon. For just the cost of a fake trilobite fossil per month, you can also enjoy tons of bonus content. Outtakes, clips we couldn't fit in the show, and of course, you can suggest episodes for us to film next. Welcome back from what I presume is a super entertaining commercial break. And if you also would like to have us record an exciting commercial break for you, pay us. Before we left, we were discussing the excellently named, not quite a bird, Jehalornis palmipinus.
Right,
which
yes.
It means palm-like tail.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, so that's what it is. And then we were going to get back into the discussion of how dead hadrosaur asses are the best possible place to preserve sturgeons.
Yeah, I have always...
And fish.
I have always said that I would like to be fossilized when I die, but I'm upset because we don't have hadrosaurs anymore for me to...
What will you do?
...crawl up into the butt of.
I've got cows. Do you want to try that one?
I feel like they play a similar role in the ecosystem. Yeah. So I'd give it
a shot. These are miniature cows.
I mean, cows, so. I don't know if they'd be big enough. Anyway, we'll cross that bridge when my husband reads my will. Has to deal with it. But so now that we've gone over some of the basics of how do things fossilize, what kind of things fossilize, some incredible weird stuff that exists out there fossilized. Again, could you just imagine that some of your most embarrassing moments were preserved through like millennia? Like I find
really that's the turtle that you picked? Okay.
Exactly. Like, oh man, just be careful around volcanoes, everyone. Don't pick your nose. You might be preserved like that until the literally end of time. So now we're going to go back to the sturgeon, right? The sturgeon that started this whole conversation. And how did this, you know, dynamic duo happen? How was it even discovered? So from this pretty amazing scientific paper on the subject, we can learn that MOR-1184, remember that's our sturgeon friend, was found while paleontologists were preparing a Brachylophosaurus specimen, which I am going to call a Brachylophosaur ass because of the inevitable. So Brachylophosaurus is a type of hadrosaur, again, duck-billed dinosaur. They lived, they're known really well from like this formation is the Judith River formation. You find that in like Montana. You also find that in parts of Canada or the equivalent. So we're talking like a medium-sized hadrosaur, which again is like larger than the cows that we have today, but not as big as like some of the big, big boys like Edmontosaurus that we get in the later, late Cretaceous. So they, you know, it was a really well-preserved hadrosaur. That's like what started it all. They're like, sweet, we've got this beautiful hadrosaur specimen. Let's prep it. And as they were prepping it, they realized it had a little something extra in there. And they found that essentially it was, you know, stuffed full of a large fish, our sturgeon friend. And it seems that somehow the sturgeon had somehow ended up in this hadrosaur's butt. So now we kind of go, how did this happen? Like, why? Again, like, I can understand coitus turtles a little bit more, because coitus between animals of the same species makes sense. But having a hadrosaur and an unrelated, totally different group of animals found together consistently in this way, it doesn't seem as natural, but maybe it is. So the authors wrote that because of the delicate preservation and complete articulation, it is obvious that the fish was not eaten by the hadrosaur. Mm-hmm. So this wasn't a Filet-O-Fish sandwich that just, you know, was swallowed whole and was like on its way out for its final resting place. Like, it wasn't, it hadn't been eaten. We can tell pretty clearly if an organism has gone through the digestive tract. A lot of times there's acid etching on the bone. A lot of times it's not like this, like the authors say, articulated, which just means like the bones are in the position that they're supposed to be skeleton wise versus just like a bag of bones, right?
Right.
So if they'd found this hadrosaur with just like a jumble of bones in its like pelvic region, then that might have been a better argument for that this fish was eaten. However, it wasn't. It's just a perfect fish shoved up the butt. You know, it is prairie dogging it, if I will say.
Is it prairie dogging it going in or popping out? I forget.
So I am pretty sure from the description, they include a photo. It's not a great photo, but we will include it. I did hashtag butt selfie when I wrote this piece. So it's, I wrote, the photo was taken at an angle that is looking straight at the hadrosaur's derriere. The dinosaur is essentially laying on its side. You can see like the tail is going off to the right. The legs with the pelvis are off to the left. The spine is in the background. And then right in the middle, in the foreground, is this little lump that is the sturgeon's head.
Right.
So it does look like the head is what is exiting and poking out of the Grundle carriage, like just like, you know, weird interspecies birth gone totally awry.
Yeah.
So it does seem to be that it's exiting and not entering.
So I have this mental image of, you know how clownfish hide in anemones?
Yes.
What if this was hiding in like a hemorrhoid ridden butthole? Just like a clownfish. I mean, you can't prove me wrong now, can you? Absence of evidence isn't evidence of absence, okay?
Thank you, doctor.
Yes, anytime.
For absolute absurdity followed by scientific quotes. You're okay.
You defend yourself, yeah.
You are totally on the same track, you know, minus the whole hemorrhoid anemone forest situation. Wow, I did not expect to be having this conversation today.
Why?
I should have. I knew we were recording. You are on to, you know, the similar trend that the authors are also hypothesizing throughout all of this. So they themselves think that the carcass was like a temporary shelter and that the fish like hid inside the dinosaur, like it was partially decomposed. And then the fish was like going in there because maybe it sensed some, you know, this disaster that buried them. And it was like the end of times. And the fish was like, save me from the flood, daddy. That's one of their takes on it. Now, some folks also think that the fish was feeding on the dead dinosaur. So then some scientists also think that the fish wasn't actually eating the dinosaur, because I kind of thought the sturgeon were detritivores eating dead stuff, but I guess they don't do as much of that. Like, modern sturgeon today are more of bottom feeders. And so that they were probably, you know, they like to scrounge around in the mud. They suck up like crabs and worms and things, and sometimes other fish. So they're not usually eating like decaying dead stuff, but they may have been eating the stuff that was eating the decaying dead stuff. Which leads me to telling you about what a sturgeon's mouth looks like, because I haven't had a chance. So I'm just going to read to you that this is from the California Fish and Wildlife website. Their mouth is thought to be unique and is thought to have been evolved separately from other fishes, forming a toothless, extendable tube that is good for sucking food items up off of the bottom. They have no teeth. Instead, the food is swallowed whole in their weird tube flesh hole. So now I'm going to send you a picture of what those look
that
like.
That is not what I was expecting.
I know you weren't. Which one is the most horrifying?
Oh my god, it looks like a ball sack. What the fuck?
That first one, yeah, that first one's real veiny.
Oh no.
Do you want to describe what you're seeing here? Like, how I would think of this is like if you attached like a flesh slinky to the bottom of a plunger.
A flesh slinky feels more generous than what I'm seeing here. First off, I forgot that sturgeon have tentacles like catfish.
Yeah, so they have little barbels. It's these, yeah, for feeling stuff out.
I mean, this photo looks like a man is holding something vaguely resembling a fish that has tentacles, and somebody has stitched a set of blue ball sacks to its face. And it's cut off at the bottom, so I can't see the opening, and I don't know if that's good or bad. So that's the first photo you've sent me. Oh, shit, there's more. Okay, I gotta scroll up a little bit. Let's do these in chronological order. Nope, don't love that. Mm-mm. Like, it's kind of a pixelated photo, but I think that's worse.
We will post all of these photos so that you can have nightmares just like I will have tonight when you think about this shoved up the butt of a dinosaur. But everyone, we will post these photos. You don't even have to wait. Just Google it on your phone right now of sturgeon mouth and you can understand. I think we did a pretty good job explaining how what they look like. So yeah, so that's another option, is that maybe the sturgeon was just feeding on and around the hadrosaur derriere or within. Like, again, if this is like the hadrosaur is decomposing in a way, it wouldn't be the way we're necessarily envisioning it. Like, it might have been a little bit more open, but for whatever reason, in deep time, it did get preserved between the cheeks. And then there is also another hypothesis that the fish wasn't feeding on or around its dinosaur friend at all, but that it was actually had already died, and that the water current from the river had just dragged this recently dead fish into this dead hadrosaur's rib cage.
It's like the I tripped and I slipped and I fell into your butthole. I don't buy that one at all.
It's more like I tripped, I died, and my rotting corpse fell into your butthole, which is also rotting. Oh my god, no one's gonna listen to this. This is horrifying.
I hope no one is listening to this immediately prior to or during
a meal.
I'm
so sorry. Oh gosh. And yes, so then we have this dead fish that essentially gets caught in this creepy net of a rib cage, and the head just pops out between the cheeks as they're both buried together for all of time, you know. Butthole buddies for forever. So
yeah, cloaca technically, right? Like, not just a butthole, multifunctional butthole.
We should have been calling this cloaca the entire episode. It's just not nearly as entertaining.
Oh, we'll have to put a trigger warning for incorrect usage of the term butthole.
It's true. We're mammal paleontologists. We're used to multiple holes down there. Okay? It's weird. It's weird. But yeah, you're right. Oh, see, I could have mentioned cloacas this whole time. Yeah.
Don't hold back. Yeah.
And apparently it just was the perfect environment. They literally wrote in the description of, like, as they prepped it, they were like, yes, the specimen was so complete and the 3D preservation was all because of the soft, loosely sandstone matrix. And I was like, oh, just like the connection of these words with this area of anatomy is very, very funny. But because of this loose matrix, they were literally able to dissect the specimen to understand how all of the delicate bones of the skull articulate together, which has never really been feasible before because the specimens have just never been preserved well enough to understand. So, I mean, it's really, really important for sturgeon evolution and, like, fish scientists. But really, guys, it just is really, really, really funny to me. I find it hilarious. Yeah. And they go on to essentially thank, in a scientific way, all of the hadrosaurs out there for giving up the goods. They have, like, a sentence in their paper. They write, In any case, based on known specimens, sediments within hadrosaurs appear to have been the main preservational medium for articulating fossil sturgeon skeletons in North America. So they are, this is essentially an acknowledgement section to hadrosaur cloaca, far and wide, because they have preserved the best examples of fossil sturgeon. And so, yeah, again, 1184 is one of three sturgeon preserved in this environment, plus a paddlefish with their weird face. So all of these guys have got weird faces. And it's all because of a dinosaur's rear end that we can thank for these incredible, incredible stories. So that's, yeah, that's what I like to share about this incredible specimen.
Captured by the cloaca.
I think that's
beautiful.
I was going to say romantic. That sounds like a romance novel.
Like a really horrible romance novel. Yeah.
All laughs aside, these fish, these incredibly preserved sturgeon are amazing fossils, but is that as good as it gets? Like, do we have other, you know, we're talking about like 3D, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And cartilage is preserved in this case, and that's a softer tissue than bone. So is that, what else? Do we got better things out there?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it gets so much better than cartilaginous fish that have a tube sock of
tube
flesh.
Sock. That's it. That's what I've been waiting for.
Tube
That's,
sock. Mwah, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. Fleshy tube sock mouth. That is not preserved. Just to be clear, that is not preserved in these specimens. It's still just cartilage.
Not that they told us.
Well, not that they told us. That's true. They did play very coy throughout the entire paper. Not like this podcast at all. But no, this is not the best form of preservation. It's probably the funniest. I'm going to go on a limb and say it's going to be a hard one
we'll
to
try.
Beat.
Let us know, guys.
We'll try. But on another episode, we're going to talk all about preservation of organic material. We're talking mummies. We're talking whatever you call them when they're mummies, but they're in ice. We're talking box. Ooh. Amber. On another episode, because it deserves, clearly, a whole line of jokes dedicated to it alone.
Thank you for listening. If you like the podcast, be sure to rate and review us on your listening platform of choice. We really, really, really appreciate it.
If you'd like to hear more and support the show, you can follow us on Patreon for some exclusive bits or on our various social media platforms. You can follow Amy on Instagram at Mary Anning's Revenge.
And Megan on Instagram and TikTok as GeoPedalFabric, or both of us at Weird and Dead on Instagram and TikTok. This podcast is brought to you by the Geology Podcasting Network, produced by The Traveling Geologist, aka Chris Spencer. Our theme song is Unlock Me by Praz Kanal.
You can follow them on Spotify, PRAZKHANAL.
Cover art was provided by Chris Spencer and the hosts.
Editing services were provided by Abby Jansen and Chris Spencer and a little bit of us as well. And this has been hosted and researched by us, Amy Atwater and Megan Weatherall. Thank you for listening. No preserved hemorrhoids though, so far.